Well, I very much enjoyed, I can only speak for myself, delivering it. I don't know what it was like receiving it, but the 10 weeks that we spent in Nehemiah were precious to me in my own preparation for those messages. I saw many good things happen in the Kirk. But now it's time to be done with Nehemiah. It's time to move on and focus our attention on Christmas. And we know this is a season of tradition. During the Christmas season, just about every family has a series of traditions that you follow year after year. Even churches have traditions. We put up trees and wreaths, and we decorate our church sanctuaries in particular ways. Now, I don't want to sound like I'm coming down on family traditions or church traditions, but what I like to do during the Christmas season is to remind myself of the obvious, remind myself of exactly what we are here to celebrate and remember. Because I've heard many people say to me, they'll turn to me in all earnestness and they'll say, "Bryn, Christmas is all about family." And they say it with such conviction, and you can tell that they've shared that perspective with many people. Christmas is all about family. Others will come along and say, "Christmas is all about giving. It's all about helping others. It's all about doing your part." Well, I'm all in favor of an emphasis on family. And I'm entirely in agreement with an emphasis on generosity towards other people, particularly people in need. But strictly speaking, this is not what Christmas is about. Strictly speaking, Christmas is about the birth of Jesus Christ. Or more to the point, Christmas is the celebration of Jesus' birthday. Now, I realize I sound like Captain Obvious when I say that to you, but I think it's necessary for our reflection this morning. For instance, imagine for a minute that it's your birthday. And we've just noted one birthday in particular, but imagine this morning that it's your birthday. And I approach you and tell you that I'm going to launch a celebration in honor of your birthday. And in honor of your birthday, I've organized and invited all of my friends to come celebrate your birthday. Not only that, but I've arranged for all of my favorite meals to be cooked for your birthday. I go so far as to hint about what I purchased you for your birthday. I hint that your present for your birthday is some hockey equipment, because I want to play some hockey with you over the next number of months and thought this would be helpful. You see what's wrong with this, don't you? The celebration of your birthday should not be about me. It should not be about my values or my preferences. Your birthday should be about you. Similarly, the celebration of Jesus' birth should not be as much about us and our traditions as it is about Him and His priorities. In reality, if I throw you a birthday party, I need to pay attention to what you want and not to what I want. So this morning, in honor of Jesus' birthday, I've chosen a passage that reveals to us what's important to Jesus, what's a priority for Him, what's a value for Him. It's worth reading a few verses of it again. Jesus says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy, where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. No one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." I don't know about you, but that passage convicts me. That passage touches me in the core. And before we dig into what this passage is saying for us, I want to touch on what the passage is not saying. Jesus is not saying it's wrong to be wealthy. You scan the scriptures and you'll see that Abraham had more possessions than any of us. Job was more wealthy. David and Solomon more wealthy than all of us. Probably all of us combined. There are men in the scriptures who are massively wealthy. Jesus is not going against those who are rich. He is going against those who have inappropriate attitudes towards money and towards material possessions. And I want to identify this morning three particular ways, whether we have little means or a great deal of wealth, we can wrestle with these three attitudes or three approaches to money and wealth that is spoken against in the scripture. The first is coveting. Coveting. Coveting is wanting what you don't have. It begins as a little child when you see the guy across from you in the sandbox with a toy you want, and you usually wrestle him for it. But as you get older, you realize it's not appropriate to wrestle things that you want from your friends and family. And so something happens in our heart. We have this, usually a secret longing for what others have. And to be honest, I've been in people's homes where I've looked at their giant TV screen, and I've honestly wished, I want that for myself. I wonder what it's going to take for me to get a TV that big. But if I get a TV that big, I need a room that's bigger. And if I need a room that's bigger, I'll probably need a house that's bigger too. Coveting is a problem, I think, for all of us. Part of me hopes it is, because it's a problem for me from time to time. I'm ashamed to admit to you that there have been Christmases, and I wish I could tell you this was when I was a little boy. But this is not too distant in the past. I remember Christmases where I wanted something in particular. And you drop hints here and there with mom and with my dear wife, and you drop hints here and everywhere, and you're hoping, you're coveting, you're longing for something that other people have to be given to you. And I remember distinctly feeling disappointment. But it's not my birthday. This is Jesus' day. This is a celebration of what God has done, and I'm fussing over a gift that I didn't receive. It's not a healthy attitude to have. Coveting, of course, is the 10th commandment. The 10th commandment basically says, don't long for your neighbor's stuff. Don't long after what they have which you lack. Coveting is the first inappropriate attitude. The second inappropriate attitude, I'm pretty sure, is the first cousin of coveting. And the second inappropriate attitude is the preoccupation with wealth. Preoccupation with wealth. And I don't know if it's fair to say technology can make this harder on us. Because I can check my bank balance any minute of the day because of the internet. If my good wife is going shopping at Marathon Mall, I can pull up Visa online and track what stores she's going to. Technology makes it possible to have a preoccupation with wealth and what we have and what we want to keep. Maybe the easiest way to think about what is preoccupation with wealth, what is thinking about money and stuff, when is it too much? I would say this, it's when coveting becomes a habit. When coveting becomes a habit. So it's not just a once in a while when you're in a certain friend's home and you want their big TV set. It's all the time. You walk down Bay Street. You meet someone for lunch. You have a meeting. And you're constantly wanting and thinking about gaining and adding to your possessions. Preoccupation with wealth pushes beyond wanting your neighbor's TV and iPad. Preoccupation with wealth makes you want their kitchen. You want their wardrobe, you want their car, you want everything. Now in Canada, we have a saying for this. It's called keeping up with the Joneses. I don't know if that's a saying that's recognized here, or if you say keeping up with the Rolls or keeping up with the Knowles. I don't know if it gets translated here. But where I come from, it's keeping up with the Joneses. Preoccupation with the acquisition of wealth often drives our work ethic. You can sometimes pick these people out because they're the people who are looking for a second job, not because they're bored and have nothing to do, but they need to feed that insatiable desire to add to their collection of things. So they add a second job, a third job. They're working longer hours. They're working ridiculously long hours, overtime after overtime, because they want more things. Now, maybe you're sitting there thinking, well, I think this pastor is being hard on us. I think he's making too much of a person's desire to build security for themselves. Is this really a central issue for us to consider at Christmas time? I think the answer is yes, and I'll tell you why. Because as I read Jesus, he explains to us that what we treasure is a function of what's going on in our heart. And I don't think it's a stretch to say that the most important thing about you to the God of this universe is what's going on in your heart. The God of this universe does not care what you do for a living. He does not care what sports or hobbies you like as much as he cares about the state of your heart. And he says, where your treasure is, your heart is also. Preoccupation with wealth. The third unhealthy attitude is the most explicit in our text, and it's the hoarding of possessions. The hoarding of possessions. And Jesus points out the temporal nature of our worldly possessions. They can spoil, they can break down, they can be stolen. And yet many of us stockpile things as if they would last forever. I want to give you an example from a couple of years ago. I had a very special day with my daughter, Anya. She would have been about 6 or 7 at the time. And we had a day where we went to the movies together. I don't remember what we saw, but it was all about having a day with my daughter. And then after we saw a movie, we went into a video arcade. Because some of you who know me know I struggle with an addiction to video games. I waste a lot of time, and I'm confessing that here today to be held accountable. But we went into this video arcade, and they explained to us that money wouldn't work in these machines. We had to get these tokens, and the only thing that worked in this video arcade was the tokens. So we got this huge collection of tokens. We weren't reckless. We spent these tokens carefully, and we were very selective in choosing which machines we wanted to play. But of course, we were compelled to use all of the tokens, because we knew in the real world, these tokens had no value. The tokens only had value while we were in the arcade. Well, similarly, money and material possessions are not the kind of currency that heaven recognizes. Now, I say that not so you spend recklessly, not so that you're not a good steward. We ought to be good stewards of our money. We ought to manage things carefully. But we need to remember that it's not unlike a child in an arcade with tokens. There is no value for these things in eternity. So Jesus basically comes along and says, you've got some attitudes towards wealth and possessions that I want redirected. I want you to notice that he doesn't say that longing for things are bad. He doesn't say being preoccupied with things is bad. He doesn't say collecting and hoarding things are bad. He says being preoccupied with, longing for, and collecting money and possessions is bad. Jesus basically says, I want all those attitudes that you might have towards money and things to now be directed towards heavenly treasures. Amen. That all those energies, all those passions we have for temporal things, we don't eradicate those passions, we redirect them. We give ourselves to heavenly treasures. Now maybe you're scratching your head and thinking, well, where do I begin? What are these heavenly treasures that the pastor is speaking of this morning? And I'll be the first to admit that it's easier to identify the temporal things. I can measure a TV set. I can test how fast a car can drive. I can measure the square footage of a nice home. I can look and calculate my bank account and investments. It's much harder to measure how my collection of heavenly treasures is going. But I want to point us to Paul's first letter to Timothy, because I think he answers the question that Jesus is leading us to. And the question is, what are the heavenly treasures? What are the things we should be going after? 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 6 and following, Paul says to Timothy, "Godliness with contentment is great gain." Now, in the Greek, the word could be translated as profit. Every business that exists, well, not everyone, there are non-profit businesses. Most businesses are trying to make a profit. And Paul says godliness with contentment makes a huge profit. He says, "We brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it." Again, Captain Obvious, but it's an important reminder for God's people. Paul goes on in verse 11, and here are the treasures. Here are the treasures. Paul says, "Pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, endurance, and gentleness." So we've identified all those things that we might want. Bigger bank balance, faster car, bigger home, bigger TV set, better investment portfolio. But now we got to look at these heavenly treasures. And I want us to take a minute on each of them, because I think it will change us if we take our passions that are normally put into acquiring things, and we put these passions to work in terms of gaining heavenly treasures, I think it will change us. And if we implement this strategy immediately, I think it will change our Christmas. And I don't know about you, but I've had some very stressful Christmases in years past. I don't know about you, but my family fights once in a while at Christmas time. There are some Christmases that I wish I could forget. And so I want to head that off for you this year. I want to lead us into an area of placing our passions that will help us get through this Christmas. So Paul says, pursue righteousness and godliness. And I take this to simply mean that we should pursue God's priorities. What does God care about? He cares about purity. He cares about righteousness. He cares about godliness or Christ-likeness. And so as a heavenly treasure, we're caring about God's priorities. Paul also urges us to pursue faith. And to grow in faith, we need to do something more than just chase God's priorities. Faith grows when we live in close proximity to Jesus Christ. So I don't simply want you to care about what God cares about. I want you to also to chase after God. Because that is the act, and that is the application of faith. That you chase after God Himself. Paul also implores us to be marked by love. And I need to warn you, that's not as easy as it first sounds. Because if we look at the example of love given to us by God the Father, it's a particular kind of love. We think of loving those who love us, loving our family, loving our friends, giving them great things for Christmas, spending time with them. But the love of God goes after those who have nothing to offer. God demonstrates His love by sending His Son to die for us while we were still sinners. God's love goes after those who are estranged, who are separated from His favor. And so I need to ask you quite point blank this morning, will Christmas put you in the presence of someone who has deeply offended you? Will this Christmas put you in the presence of someone who has harmed you or a member of your family? If the answer is yes, I pray that you'll see the logic of loving that person, remembering that the love of God forgave our transgressions against him. The love of God is bigger than a love that just loves those who are nice to us. The love of God goes after those who are difficult to love. Paul also says he wants us to have endurance. He wants us to have endurance. And you and I know that if we want to have physical endurance, we need to repeat the activity. Now again, I don't know why I share these things with you, because they don't put me in the best of light. But recently, I thought, since my daughter is a competitive swimmer and my wife is a strong swimmer, I had the ridiculous idea that maybe I would try swimming. And so I went down to the pool, and most of the people in the pool were older than me. So I thought, okay, I work out a few days a week. They're a little bit older than me. I'm going to do just fine. And so I see they're going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Well, I went down the pool once, and I thought I might die. And so I took a 5-minute break, and then I swam back the other way. And then I realized that these older, more seasoned swimmers, I was not going to be able to keep up with them. And so I thought, okay, for every 3 laps they do, I'm going to do 1 lap. Well, slowly by slowly, my 5-minute breaks between laps are more like 1 or 2 minute breaks between laps. And what I'm reminded of is that to get endurance, you need to repeat that activity. To get endurance in a particular realm, you need to repeat that activity. So when Paul says that he wants you to have spiritual endurance, it means we have to repeat the stuff that brings us closer to God. Whether it's singing hymns in our home, whether it's attending Sunday worship, whether it's praying, whether it's reading our Bible, whatever it is we do that brings us closer to God, our habits must be regular, not sporadic, not occasional. The only way to get endurance is to repeat that activity. And lastly, Paul says that we should pursue gentleness. Gentleness. And as I look at the Greek and was wondering whether this was the best translation, let me just say this. Gentleness is patience in action. Gentleness is patience in action. The easier approach, when somebody's doing something that we would consider a demerit or something we don't like, it calls for patience, right? Just to not retaliate against that person or that thing. To bear up and to bite our lip, as they say. But the word Paul uses here is stronger than patience. He's saying we need to do more than not retaliate. We need to do more than bite our lip. We need to respond with kindness. So when you've waited in that really, really long lineup and you feel entirely justified to give that person a piece of your mind, Paul reminds you to extend kindness. So there's our good-sized list of heavenly treasures. I don't know if you've written them down or memorized them already. We're to pursue the heavenly treasure of righteousness. Godliness, going after God's priorities. We're to pursue the treasure of faith, that is going after God Himself. Pursue the treasure of love, the treasure of endurance, the treasure of gentleness. And remember those 3 inappropriate attitudes towards money and things? I want to bring them back in, because we need those passions. We need to have a longing for the traits on that list. We need to have a preoccupation with the things on that list. We need to have a collection of heavenly treasures. Because as you pursue those things, and as you acquire those things, I want to encourage you, whatever gains you make there, it lasts forever. It has value for you in this life and the next. It's permanent. It's forever. If you want to be blessed this Christmas, pursue heavenly treasures with all your heart. Amen.